Welcome back to the Roundtable. It's a Friday morning edition of the Roundtable, 12 minutes after 9 o'clock. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. We're joined today by our resident investigative reporter and professor, Rosemary Armeo, our resident curmudgeon, Alan Shartok, and...
No, I'm only deputy curmudgeon.
Oh, yeah? Who's the...
You know who it is.
Oh, I see. You're going to go there. And assistant editor of the Times Union, Mike Spain. Good morning, all.
Good morning.
Rosemary, you didn't say good morning.
Oh, good morning.
Hi.
I'm sorry.
You're not following along?
No, I'm reading our news today. We have so much.
Remember, there's only 46 minutes to go, and then
right.
Joe will be back.
I'm
so
ready.
Just stick with me on this.
Okay,
the
I will.
Email address is roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. You can also comment on our webpage, wamc.org/roundtable. Today's post is 4/10/15 panel. Is that correct? Is today the 10th?
It is indeed.
Mm-hmm. Seems right.
Well, yes.
Very
yes.
Nice. Yes. All right. So first item of business today, President Barack Obama says he'll decide soon whether to remove Cuba from the U.S. list of state sponsors of terrorism. The president says the State Department has completed its review of the question. He's signaling that Cuba will be removed as part of his diplomatic outreach to the island nation after decades of isolation. The president is in Panama City for a summit of Western Hemisphere nations, and this could be the site of a potentially historic encounter with Cuban President Raul Castro. Panel, I put it to you. Does Cuba come off the list?
Yeah. Yes,
I think he's pretty much said that, that he was indicating that yesterday when he was in Jamaica after visiting the Bob Marley Museum. And he was asked about it, and he said the State Department had reviewed the issue and there would be an announcement that he would be making. And why would he? And that seems to be the last hurdle before
the report is actually in. He hasn't announced it and said it's still undergoing interagency review, but he's already seen it. And I think if it were a no, we would not be hearing the encouragement we are.
Right. It'll clear the way to embassies opening.
It seems the bar is fairly low. You only have to not sponsor terrorism for 6 months and you're off the list.
What does the list mean anyway? Let's ask that. I mean, how does one get on it? You don't like Cuba, so they're on it.
If you're a sponsor of terrorists, then you're on the list, right?
Well, it's been a political tool, a designation based on the premise that, you know, basically endorsed the anti-Cuban rebels who live in the United States who say that, you know, just to exist and to have Castro's in power constitutes a terrorist act. Or
if it were realistic, you know, Russia and Saudi Arabia would be on the list, way ahead of Cuba.
Yeah.
Alan, you've been very quiet.
No, I'm listening to my colleagues who I enjoy so much and listening to the wisdom and basically agreeing with what they're saying. And therefore, I don't think there's any reason to say anything. You see, the reason you don't say... It's a little jokesy.
But you do.
if the real interesting thing to me is not terrorism, but there are like some real bad guys hiding out in Cuba, wanted for murders and other crimes, but murder, of course, is the worst in the United States.
Yeah.
So like, what's going to happen to them? That they're not terrorists. They only killed one person. So right. What happens to them? Are
will
we going to get them back? Will there
extradition
be
a, treaty?
Yeah, an extradition treaty, or will they be,
and there may be
sent out?
People in the U.S. that Cuba may want, I don't even know. But those are the things that would happen after they restore diplomatic relations, and those would be on the table, I think. You're right.
I don't think that actually works that way. Didn't Cuba send all their bad guys to us with the Marti
That's right. We have
flight.
A lot of them here.
They dumped all their bad guys.
Well, they were not only bad guys, but often they were people who had mental issues.
Yeah, they just didn't want to deal with any problems.
Yeah, and so they just said, "Okay, we're gonna allow this people to come back, and first among them will be the people who have the most problems."
Well, Congress will have 45 days to block if the president delists Cuba. The Congress will have 45 days. However, according to CNN, House GOP leadership aides to the House GOP leadership say no decisions have been made on whether Congress will actually do that.
Well, the whole issue here are the politics of Florida. That we all know that we saw, you know, an election lost on that basis, or maybe lost, depending on how you're looking
at it. Election turned on.
However, what is interesting is that the younger generation of Cubans and the older ones, who were the most adamant about, you know, keeping Castro on the bad list, is changing. And as the older ones go and the younger ones come up, things are really changing. We also saw in several recent elections that the Cuban immigrants do not speak for all Latinos by any means. And so this is a huge political. You're looking quizzically. You know what I'm saying here? In other words, there's no expectation that somebody from one of the other Latin American places is going to say, oh, yeah, Cuba's a bad actors, and therefore, you know, we don't like them, and therefore we're going to vote against the Democrats or whatever. That doesn't happen. In fact, the Democrats go in large number. The Latinos go in large number towards the Democrats.
Real politics doesn't seem to be guiding the Republican Party, however. I mean, there's a lot of women in the country, too, and they still attack women and go after women's issues. So just the fact that the demographics are changing, that policy should not be built around the Castros, who are both very elderly and will not be around much longer, or a population in this country that's becoming increasingly interested in ties with Cuba. It just still seems, the Republican leadership at least, still seems to be rabidly anti-Cuba.
Well,
led by Boehner today,
who's
crabbing about the way protesters were treated in Panama.
Yeah.
Which didn't seem any worse than the way we treat protesters here, say, Occupy Wall Street. Peaceful protesters being, sprayed with mace and manhandled. Yeah, we do it here.
What Rosemary is alluding to here, I'll quote from CNN. House Speaker John Boehner criticized the Obama administration's move to normalize relations with Cuba and urged the president to denounce violence on pro-democracy demonstrators at a regional summit with foreign leaders in Panama this week. Boehner seized on reports of clashes with critics of the Cuban government and said in Panama City and said that Jorge Luis Garcia Perez, a human rights activist who attended this year's State of the Union as his guest, was among those who was assaulted by pro-Castro supporters.
Yeah, they should come to, say, Ferguson, Missouri, and see how we handle peaceful protests.
But does that make it right?
Anybody who committed an act of violence in Panama should be arrested by the Panama police and stand, in their system of justice.
It's just cheap shot stuff.
That's not what this is about.
Where is the statesmanship on either side, by the way?
I
really think that this is just petty stuff. Boehner is showing off for the right of his party and is saying, look, I'm going to dirty him on every occasion, no matter how true or not it is. I happen to be perusing. I washed my hands since I got in here, the POST this morning. They do it in every column, everything they do.
We could talk about Iran, which I guess we're going to soon.
Yeah,
same thing happening there. No statesmanship by anybody that I can see. Israel, Iran, or the United States.
Or Chuck Schumer, perhaps.
I know.
So we'll talk about that because he's on a fence and he's got a tough situation and a tough road politically to go on this.
Yep.
All right, let's take a break, Mr. Hopper. It's the Roundtable on WAMC. Roundtable@WAMC.org is the email address. We'll be back. We'll talk about the latest from Iran.
Support for WAMC comes from Safe Harbors of the Hudson, Newburgh, presenting an evening of world music featuring Maku Sound System Saturday at 8 p.m. in the lobby of the Ritz, safeharbors.org. Stagecoach Tavern at Racebrook Lodge, Route 41, Sheffield, Massachusetts, presenting the Brooklyn Raga Massive, a night of Indian classical music, Saturday at 8 p.m., rblodge.com for tickets. And Pioneer Post and Beam, a non-kit post and beam builder in Belchertown, Massachusetts, designing and erecting customized barns, artist studios, garages, and additions, pioneerpostandbeam.com.
The Roundtable on WAMC, 21 minutes after 9 o'clock on a Friday morning. Mike Spain from the Times Union, Rosemary Armeo, and Alan Chartok here on the panel. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. Iran's president says Tehran will not sign on to a final nuclear deal with world powers unless economic sanctions are lifted immediately after doing so. Hassan Rouhani spoke during a ceremony marking Iran's Nuclear Technology Day, how ironic, which celebrates the country's nuclear achievements. Iran and six world powers reached a framework agreement last week aimed at keeping Tehran from being able to develop a nuclear weapon. The deal should be or is expected to be finalized by the end of June. However, Iran's top leader has stopped short of giving his endorsement to the framework deal, saying he'll wait till it's finalized. In what appears to be a bargaining tactic, Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei says in remarks published Thursday on his official website and via Twitter that there is no binding agreement yet. He's neither for nor against the deal. Put that in perspective. Go ahead.
I think, Ray, you've only read part of the opposition that is building to
this.
There is a staggering set of opponents.
Right.
The Supreme Leader of Iran, Henry Kissinger, and now Chuck Schumer are against it.
Well, right. And to put that in perspective here at home, Senate backers of the bill, the White House fears could dismantle this deal, are closing in on a veto-proof threshold of support. The Senate Foreign Relations Committee is expected to approve the bill next Tuesday and hold a full Senate vote soon after. The measure provides a skeptical Congress, and I think skeptical can be used on both both sides of the party line. It provides a skeptical Congress with the opportunity to review the deal and prevents the president from waiving congressional sanctions on Iran during the review period. Now, Schumer, our senior New York U.S. senator, is between a rock or Iran and a hard place here. Rosemary,
his Jewish supporters.
Explain.
Yes. He has huge support from the Jewish community, which does not like this. Israel has been controversially outspoken against it, and so he surprised everybody by coming out. As did, by the way, the New Jersey senator, who's now in trouble and kicked off.
Yeah, Menendez. He's a co-author of that bill.
Yeah,
isn't he?
The same thing. He's the co-author of the bill because he also has a large Jewish constituency that he must answer to.
Well, let me just say, as probably the only Jew on the panel, Jewish person on the panel, I personally support the president of the United States on this. And I think a lot of Jewish people that I know do. So that to dismiss it as only, you know, as a unified Jewish community, I think would be wrong.
Why else do you think Schumer is like
no,
a
no, no, no.
taking
I think
this
there's
step.
A point here that, there, first of all, he may actually believe it. God help us. Somebody actually
he has not spoken
it.
That way
believe,
up to
believe
now.
What, Alan?
He may believe that the treaty is not a good one.
The bill calls for the Senate to have a say on the bill, not
and
that it's good or bad.
Yeah.
He does support
he may support that because he knows that's the way off the hook for him. If you say
that's his excuse.
Because you know what'll happen. I do think that this business of all Cubans are one way, all Jews are another way, is misplaced. I do.
Many of the Jewish constituents of Chuck Schumer are calling for him to be skeptical and worse about the Iran the Iran treaty. So that puts it in trouble. He's really powerful. He's the number, three Democrats, and
soon
could
be
much higher.
Number one.
Number one. And you combine that with the criticism of the Supreme Leader coming out in Iran against this. I think a whole lot of it is just talk.
Absolutely,
to be honest.
Politics at work.
Yeah, he's dealing with his constituency at home. His negotiators have been in touch with him, and they did not negotiate for any of this—an immediate end to the sanctions and deep, deep investigation. Those are two things that have been on the board and discussed for months. And the Supreme Leader knew this, so I think this is for public consumption. But you combine that with the stuff at home and Republicans and the Democrats now teaming with them like Chuck Schumer really are making a strong case that's weakening the president's stand.
I don't think they're not teaming with the Ayatollah. They're teaming with each other.
No, they're
clearly
teaming
not.
With the Ayatollah's idea.
The Ayatollah has a completely different take. The Ayatollah says, and I'll quote here, and this is don't slap me around, but this is from the Weekly Standard. However, verifiable quotes. The White House put out, this is a quote from Khamenei, the White House put out a statement just a few hours after our negotiations finished their talks. This statement, which they called a fact sheet, was wrong on most of the issues, Khamenei said, according to Reuters. Khamenei added that the fact sheet, which doesn't match Iran's understanding, exposes America's devilish intentions.
Yeah, I mean, that's for consumption
but
in
Iran. But
if
the facts are the facts wrong or are the facts right? This would seem to be something
verifiable. They left the negotiations, went back to their home countries, you know, John Kerry and the negotiators for Iran, with totally different documents and messages because they were skewed to play to the home audience.
Correct.
I think what they're trying to get out of this, I mean, this is only the framework. I mean, June is the operable time when...
Well, that's very important what you're saying now.
Yeah.
Because it is, the dots were not filled in, the spaces were not filled in.
That's exactly right. And I think if there's a sense out there that if they can agree to anything, it'll begin the process of maybe more agreements. But you're right, Rosemary. It looks like politically, it's just not going to be palatable.
I mean, yes, we don't think, the Republicans don't think the same way Khomeini does. They hate it for different reasons than he does. But the combined effect is you've got Republicans here, you have hardline Iranians, you have Henry Kissinger, you have all of Israel against this. Wow, that's a big hill to climb to get this through.
And then you have one other thing coming up, and that's Hillary. I mean, what does she do now? Because, you know, let's assume she's going to be president of the United States for a second. Let's just assume that that's the case. She's going to have to be doing negotiations, too. And if she pulls the rug out from under Obama, you know, what does that say about her mettle?
She has not yet. She has spoken in favor of it.
She's taking a wait and see.
Yeah.
So to prove her mettle, she has to agree with the president? Is that your contention?
No, those are the words you're putting in my mouth. No, I think she has a very difficult choice for all of the reasons that have been so well put by the panel this morning, which is that a good deal of this is politics. When the Ayatollah does his thing, he's talking to his constituency. When the Republicans try to dirty Obama, that's what they've always done, no matter what he's saying on this or on Cuba or anything else. But if you're going to be president, that's where the governing, where the politics have to stop and the governing has to start. And if you pull the rug out from under your predecessor, I think that's a bad thing. Does she have to? No, she doesn't have to.
Well, she said the devil is in the details, which is a way to pretty
push
much
push it down the line.
Yeah, kick it down the road. Yeah. But June—
I wasn't happy with that.
They're all using that as wiggle room.
And June is really the operable time. And, you know, perhaps they'll even extend it. Who knows? I think there's— I mean, it's a remarkable thing that this negotiation even took place, that there were top U.S. negotiators, the Secretary of State, with the top leaders, civilian leaders of Iran. And that by itself should not be disregarded. I mean, it's a remarkable turn from 35 years ago when, you know, the Ayatollah Khomeini came back from France and the Islamic Revolution happened.
Well, things have changed, though.
Yeah.
Really changed.
Oh, yes, they have.
For example, this Ayatollah does not enjoy the support that the previous Ayatollah
enjoyed. And there's hints of suggestions of democracy, actually.
And people are ticked off.
We're talking about Cubans and young Cuban Americans of, you know, Americans of Cuban descent don't feel that strain, that same, you know,
fire
towards Castro as their elders do. There's young Iranians who are very pro-Western, and they've demonstrated it. And they have demonstrations supporting
and have been tortured for it, by the way.
Right, and they've been punished, yes.
We need to take a break here. The email address is roundtable@wamc.org. We'll break for news. We'll be back. Some nice bumper music there, Dave Hopper. It's the Roundtable on WAMC. 9:34 is the time. It's Friday morning. We made it through the week almost. Mike Spain from the Times Union is here. Rosemary Armeo, a journalism professor and investigative reporter, also associate of nothing. He's Alan Shartok. He is the lead dog here in the room, and we're always happy to have Alan here. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. The email address is roundtable@wamc.org. Roundtable@wamc.org. Alan, anything in the mailbag?
Well, there is something. So, Nancy says, not all Israelis are against the deal with Iran. Many Jews in the U.S. also believe the deal is a good deal. The groups that believe this ate the progressive groups such as J Street and Jewish Voice for Peace. It says eight, but I have a feeling it meant hate. But you never know. Maybe profound. Bernie from Woodburn, an American of Jewish heritage, states, I support Israel, but I do not support Netanyahu. We need to change our relationship with Iran. Now is the time to make that change. And a W, Bill, the U.S. has normalized relationship with Vietnam, Japan, Germany, and to some extent Russia. The reasons for forgiving these enemies of America was not humanitarian. A major reason was that these nations provided great economic opportunities for American business interests. Unfortunately, Cuba doesn't offer the same opportunity at this point. By the way, I just want to insert, I beg to differ. There are European companies and hotels and everybody else who are rushing in into Cuba. Okay.
Canada is all over.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Cuba doesn't offer the same opportunity at this point. Anti-Castro Cubans, expats, are used by Republicans and their business allies to rationalize an irrational approach to diplomatic relations with neighboring countries. John says Mr. Schumer is a hero or a goat, depending on how you feel about the Iran treaty. The one thing he should not be is the leader of the Democratic Party in the Senate, based on his lukewarm support for President's position on Iran.
Interesting. Interesting that his job as leader in the Senate is to support the president. That's interesting.
Will will that affect his effort to win that position?
I can guarantee you it will not.
Because it'll be different in 2 years.
I can guarantee you it will not.
That's
bad for Obama. Now he has to worry about his own leadership, not just not just the opposition. You know, there's one other thing, if I may add this, that we have not talked about that is that puts this a treaty into a lot of difficulty, and that's Yemen, where right now Iran and Saudi Arabia are fighting. There are warships, there are planes.
Iran is warning Saudi Arabia, cut the bombing out, stop it now.
And the United States has so far backed Saudi Arabia.
Yes.
This does not help us with Iran. And it could get worse. And it also doesn't help the treaty.
And the president, I'm sorry, I'm not quoting here, I'm paraphrasing, but basically said, any country that has trouble with Iran, we're here to help. I mean, basically, that was the thrust of what he said. So it doesn't. Does that make for a good final negotiation?
In Syria, the U.S. and Iran have the same goals to knock out ISIS.
The U.S. is very confused about Syria because of that very issue. You know, we're letting Syria disintegrate because we didn't want to go in and help Iran. And so we don't really have, as you've said many times, Alan, a really good play to make in Syria. But here's the other thing. We're making a treaty with the country, Iran, to not export any kind of nuclear bomb. They're exporting all kinds of warfare all over the Middle East. It's really doesn't make the treaty look good.
Alan.
And Tom says, I don't know about religion. I just don't want to go to war with Iran. I support my president and not Chuck Schumer. And this may continue to the next senatorial election. It may be time for someone that's not been bought by special interests. I'd like to respond to that. Number one, I think a lot of special interests. You take a look at who's giving money to whom, and you see that, you know, nobody's exempt from this. And I think it may be rough.
Maybe Elizabeth Warren, but I don't know anybody else who's exempt.
And by the way, Elizabeth Warren is not going to be president of the United States.
Nope.
Probably for that reason. It may be time for someone who's not been bought by special interests.
Good point.
I don't know that Chuck Schumer has been bought by a special interest.
And
I think he may have a philosophical difference with other people.
And yes, and isn't it possibly an overreach to say that he is differing from the president a great deal? What he's saying is he wants some oversight on this. And frankly, the details of this framework agreement are clearly in question.
Yeah, in dispute.
In dispute by both Iran and people on this side. The critics of the treaty here say, well, listen, the details of these fact sheet, they don't add up. And so maybe Senator Schumer is saying, Congress should play a role in this.
Well, you know, Ray, there's another way to look at that, and that is if Schumer is against the treaty, and I suspect he is, then his move is not to say I'm against my president. His move is to put it on the Congress and to say the Congress should be looking at this, and he may be right about
that. That's exactly what he's doing. Yeah. And by historical and constitutional tradition, he's right. But we have a Congress right now that doesn't just oppose the president. They intrude in his negotiations. I mean, their
method of operation is just to make him fail. And
exactly.
It seems to be that way from the beginning to now. And
so
to
Schumer, is he not taking that in?
Well, yeah, but he doesn't want to say, I don't like the treaty and I don't like Iran and I'm worried about Israel. I think he just wants to say, if I put it into this slot over here, it goes down. And I know that, and that's the way he plays the game without allegedly betraying his president.
But you can see, I think you put it right, rock and hard spot.
You know,
does he play his own beliefs and what his constituents want, or does he play the role that he wants as leader in the Senate for the Democratic Party and support the president?
You know, he's always been sort of a gutsy guy, even when he's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Let me give you an example. He called me and asked if he could come to the Lyndon Norris Auditorium to say why he was going to vote in favor of the Iraq intrusion all those years ago.
Interesting.
And he came in, and you all may remember that's the time, one of the proudest in my life, that we had said to the group, you can write your questions down and we'll take them like they do at the National Press Club. And there was a guy there who had long gray hair and bald head and who was standing there with a cup of coffee. and he was screaming at our intern, "That's not the way I'm going to do it. I'm going to stand up." And I yell at him. And I said, "You don't talk to her that way," to the guy. I came over, and he threw the cup of coffee in my face. And then 102 cops, maybe five, showed up to police the thing.
And removed him from the auditorium?
Well, yes and no. It was very strange.
Escorted him out.
It was very strange. They questioned him for quite a while, and it was really something. However, I have to say that, you know, the laundry did not come back well.
Oh.
You had coffee stains on it?
Yeah.
That's stinks.
Well, you get a new hat, you're fine.
Well, that's not so hard to come by.
No. How did we get there?
I have a way of doing.
Schumer. I just wanted.
I just wanted to say, Chuck
end.
Schumer. Chuck Schumer's a guy who quite frequently does what he wants to do, even though he knew by coming here and talking to this public radio audience, it was not going to be a popular move. But he did it. I didn't agree with him. I certainly didn't agree with him. But we would say yes to him, yeah.
I almost sense from listening to you, Rosemary, that in some way this is a sin for Schumer to disagree with the president on this, and he should be backing him to the hilt.
Political.
Yeah, I mean, I really do think the role of the president, the Democratic majority,
minority leader
yeah. is to back... The president. Why else have
isn't
the party?
To do what you think is right? Isn't that really what it's all about?
No, that's his job as a senator, but I don't think you can do both.
Let me agree with
Harry. Very interesting statement you just made.
We did not. Right, I do think that. Did Harry Reid ever disagree with him?
Wait, come on now. Your prejudice is showing. I hate
what
to
prejudice?
Do I'm about to say. I happen to agree with Raymond for once in my life, which is why I'm reexamining.
Can you put that in the Times Union tomorrow, Mike?
Front page.
My position here. And that is. And that is that I do think that if it was a Republican taking on his president, like in the Nixon stuff, you'd be up and cheering and say, "What a man of courage!" And that's in fact what happened. Some senior Republicans who should have been supporting the president, according to your dicta, ended up.
We're talking Watergate here.
We're talking job description. He's not the leader.
No, that is not his job description.
What was the job he wants, Alan?
His job description is that he is the leader of the Democrats who elected him in their conference. Where's the job description that you have to support the president no matter what he does?
That became the rationale for Nixon's resignation. My political exactly. base has been lost, and
Rosemary would have been the first one up there applauding all those courageous Republicans.
Well, this what?
I'm not going to honor that with a response.
This is fun. Let's take a break. Roundtable at WAMC.org is the email address if you want to weigh in. Roundtable at WAMC.org.
Is that word again.
Support for WAMC comes from the Shawangunk Wine Trail, presenting Pasta Primo Vino, a two-day tasting tour of wine and pasta at 14 Hudson Valley wineries, Saturday and Sunday, GUNKSwine.com for info and tickets. Williams College Department of Music, featuring Anthony DeMare and the Liaisons as they reimagine the songs of Stephen Sondheim on the piano, Friday, tonight at 8 p.m., music.williams.edu.
Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. 9:45. It's a Friday morning. Rosemary Armeo is here. Mike Spain, Alan Shartok, Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. The email address is roundtable@wamc.org. And Alan, we have email.
Tanya wrote specifically to Rosemary. Rosemary Armeo, I don't understand how you can be so dismissive of what the Ayatollah said about the deal, as if the fact that he is pandering to popular opinion in Iran somehow excuses his blatant anti-American sentiment. Is this Iranian diplomacy?
No, it's Iranian politics, and we have done the same, saying about Iran and the deal. We're going to have unlimited intrusion into their privacy. They're playing to the popular.
Wouldn't you like to?
I think the Ayatollah knew exactly what was being negotiated, or they wouldn't have been negotiating.
Oh, no.
And now what he says is he also added. Let me point this out. I neither support nor oppose the deal
at this time. He's waiting.
Yeah,
what he said, I'm waiting until we actually have a deal.
Yeah.
And there aren't the details at this point.
Yeah.
So no, I don't.
So really
I don't
no
put a whole lot of weight in. But the word again.
But the politics of each of these, the American situation, the Iranian situation, are very different. I mean, here's an Ayatollah who I am assuming is beginning to lose power over there, and that the younger people over there want business, they want the sanctions removed, they want all of that.
They want fast food places from the U.S. to be able to open there.
Right.
Really?
And yeah. And he's holding on for dear life. But I see this as the dynamic is different in terms of what Obama is going through. It's just a different set of fact patterns.
What would be interesting, and you can't do it until you get all the details, but to lay one over the other and see if there's any common areas, and that will be the agreement, if there is any.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else in the mailbag there?
I'm afraid not.
Okay, well, that's good, actually, at this time, because Mike Spain, who is associate editor of the Times Union, has
Mike.
A piece of regional interest for us.
Yes. We're talking about Casey Seiler, our state editor's story today, about how the state comptroller has disallowed about $600,000 in reimbursements that would go to the former state Senate Majority Leader Joe Bruno, really, which is only about a quarter of the more than $2 million legal fees that he had to pay to essentially win an acquittal on the charges that he was basically running bribery.
First of all, this whole thing really ticks me off. I'll tell you why. You know, what you're alluding to here, quite correctly, is the fact that in the statute, if a public official is accused of doing something wrong and gets off, we have to pay their legal bill. The state does.
Public officers' law.
That's right.
Reasonable legal cost.
But weren't these federal charges? Why should the state pick up the tab?
Well, no. I mean, if you're charged with something that you did while you were in office, an official position, and you it includes elected officials but not limited to them, and you are acquitted, and the charges pertain to public service, you are entitled to reasonable reimbursement of your legal fees.
I'm not quite through with what I was saying. and that was that there is no such thing as the public people's law. So let's say Andrew Cuomo is Attorney General and he comes after...
We got to Andrew Cuomo. I was wondering when we were going to do that.
Say the secret way, and the duck will come down and pay $50.
And let's say he comes after somebody, and they're acquitted, and they had to spend $1 million to defend themselves, right? Mm-hmm. Are you following me here?
Mm-hmm.
Where's the public officer's law, the public people's law that says somebody who's been falsely accused by an attorney general gets his money back?
Could not disagree with you.
Okay, oh, I love this. Go ahead.
Could not disagree with you more. Public officers, we need people in public office. We do not have enough. We do not recruit enough good people, strong people. If you were to say, okay, you can serve, and if you do anything in office that could get you...
You're on your own.
Yeah, you're on your own. I wouldn't be president of the library board now if I didn't have that protection. I'll tell you.
I couldn't disagree with you more, Rosemary. I'm against you on this.
We shouldn't indemnify the people that are working for us.
I'm against you on this because, look, these politicians put that stuff into the law that they get the money if they have to defend themselves because they were protecting themselves. They weren't doing it to get more people to run for public office. Quite the contrary. It's ridiculous.
Well, the issue came down to reasonable costs. Now, some of these reimbursements that the attorneys for Joe Bruno had sought were for, they didn't provide receipts.
No invoices for travel expenses.
Yeah. And they have some time to produce those, and maybe they will, and they'll get some of this $600,000.
My favorite was the lawyers wanted to get paid for
about
talking to reporters. $26,000
for talking. And that was thrown out. Now
at $1,000 an hour or something.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, they're crazy.
And the fees that the government will reimburse Bruno for $600 an hour,
up
but no
to,
more.
Yeah,
up to $600.
Yeah, by the way,
that.
I don't know. I want to take that.
I am in the
I don't know
wrong
that,
field.
That the lawyers are charging $1,000, maybe $500.
Well, Abby Lowell, the Washington-based lawyer, I think it demonstrates that he was charging a lot.
Yes.
Now, interesting, a couple of months ago when this all came out and Bruno was seeking his reimbursement or his, you know, the legal fees. My favorite newspaper had an editorial that suggested that it's perfectly reasonable for Bruno to get, as the former Senate Majority Leader, to get reimbursed, and suggested that he be compensated at the same rate that the state pays for legal aid lawyers, which is $75 an hour.
Funny.
And he was a backer of that bill that basically pays the felony defense rate of these 18 18B lawyers, these private counsels who are hired to defend people who don't have any means, you know, public
That's
defenders,
great.
Essentially.
That's great.
What we should make it, the same rate that we pay them. They're not getting an Abby Lowell or a Stuart Jones, you know.
Yeah, no, I just think what's good for the goose, good for the gander.
Yes.
People are going to be falsely accused by government.
Is that your attempt to have the final word, even though it's wrong?
Boy, am I glad it's Friday.
Yes. That is so.
Oh, boy.
That is so. Do any of you have a friend who tends to talk down his nose at people? You know, a nose talker.
It's better than a nose picker.
I have a friend named Michael, and he talks, is that what you really think? You know, I mean, it's just dripping with whatever. Snot and sarcasm.
All right. Let's go to the mailbag.
Okay, I only have one here.
Good.
I want to read to you. And this is from Steve. What happens if there is no treaty with Iran? That is a great question. So I'm assuming they scurry down in the hole that they've built, which cannot be touched by an atomic bomb, and build that bomb as fast as they possibly can.
Or the sanctions.
What has happened for the last 10 years, I guess?
Or the sanctions continue, and China and Russia move into the vacuum, and everything's happy and hunky-dory in Russia, and China and are in Iran, and China and Russia build their imperialistic goals even further.
Or we have Israeli bombs dropping on all the plants.
That would be a possibility.
Yeah. Which happened in the 80s with Iraq, right?
That certainly is a possibility.
Well, anyway, we digress. Nice job there from the Times Union.
Agree with
Times
me? Say that loud.
.com.
Thank you, sir.
Alan just agreed with me.
Yeah, I'm sorry. We were having an off-center discussion.
We're now at the point of this show where the panel has separate discussions.
Yes.
Yeah.
And maybe we ought
stereo.
To have the engineers put one in the left channel, one in the right
channel.
We're
breaking up into discussion groups.
Yeah. Well, heavens to Murgatroyd, it's almost over. All right, so this one is this one's from the Washington Post. Being fat in middle age reduces Being fat in middle age reduces risk of developing dementia. Research.
I love that.
Okay, a surprising.
I'm going home to eat ice cream.
All right, nice.
But it does cause a risk. Heart
All
attack
right. Well,
risk.
let me read it, and you buy the premise, and then we'll see if we buy the gag. A surprising study contradicting all previous research found that being fat in middle age appears to cut the risk of developing dementia rather than increase it. The Lancet Scientific Journal has reported a study of 2 million people. Found that the underweight were far more likely to develop dementia, a growing problem among the elderly in the Western world. Underweight people had a 34% higher risk of developing dementia than those of a normal weight. Again, this is quoting the Washington Post. The study found while the very obese had 29% lower risk of becoming forgetful and confused, showing other signs of senility. So underweight people had a 34% higher risk of developing dementia.
I have a few things to say about
okay,
this.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
first
okay.
of all, I want you all to know out there
how much you weigh.
That Ray printed this out this morning and handed it to me, and there was what can only be described as a devilish, look
you
to
sound
his,
like the Ayatollah.
I deny
look,
it.
Look to his eye.
I'm going
to Second
out
of all,
sheet.
What did now, gang? Because you read it far more closely than I did, as usual. The question is, if you, for example, are overweight, your chances of, as I always remember the studies I've seen of cancer and heart attack and other, and then if you add to that, and I don't think there's anybody in the room who does this, but if you add to that, you know, like smoking, your chances go down.
But that, again, this is not part of the study.
Oh, is this like a pool we're going to take bets on who dies first?
Well, you know Ray that, we, you know that we're talking about this because Ray took a shot at me.
That's not a shot.
Because I ride the bike for an hour every morning, because I watch what I eat.
Why is this about him?
I'm going home to eat ice cream.
Rosemary, why is this about him? This is a scientific study I thought was of interest to our listeners.
Yes, it is.
And suddenly...
Well, although why is it an important study? There are, what, 4 underweight people in America anymore, counting Alan?
There's plenty of people who have a
waistline.
Well,
Mike, you're thin.
Well, I was just reading yesterday a different article that said that men should keep their girth under 40 inches or they really risk cardiac arrest and cardiac disease. And women, they should keep it under 35 inches.
Yeah.
So you have this contradiction. If you want to be, you know, healthy, heart healthy, you risk dementia.
You make a point, which is... They're going to get you one way or the other.
Yes, I believe it's true. We're all going to die.
The mortality rate is 100%.
Absolutely. Didn't we have a report that they're working on that? They're trying to stop that idea that we're all going to die? I know. That's the one I want.
The really, really rich are looking for the Ponce de Leon solution.
Now, Rosemary, at times you will come in here and not be in a good mood. Are you sure you want to live forever? Because, I mean, I would suspect if you're 172, you're going to be in a bad mood even more often.
Well, or there's another thing about this dementia study. I want to know, as you wither away from Alzheimer's, whether you are less weight so that they become part of the study. Don't you follow me?
The methodology would be interesting. Are these people who were already underweight or thin before they developed dementia, or do they... Right.
Yeah.
No, that's
and there is a sentence in
the devils are the devil is in the details.
We've said that far too often about everything today.
Yeah.
The devil is in Studio A. Go ahead, Mephistopheles.
I can't find it, but there was a sentence in here that was very good, which was, you know, which implied anyway, it's badly written, was that if you
the Washington Post piece was badly written.
Yeah, if you start eating now, you can save yourself.
Well, the ending line is great. It's from one of the researchers who said, so even if there is a protective effect against dementia from being from being overweight or obese, you're not going to live long enough to benefit from it. Mm. So you're going to die one way or the other.
Well, you're going to die one way or another anyway.
Yep.
So live, my friends.
So
live.
I'm going home to eat ice cream.
Good for you. What do you got?
Oh, fudge royale. Oh,
chunky
so
chocolate
good.
Or something.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That sounds pretty good right about now. Alan, what do you say? You and I go down and get an ice cream sundae after
fine
the show?
Yeah? Sure.
We could take that stationary bike over. All right, we're almost done. Funny. Roundtable at WAMC.org is the email address.
I have to vamp for another minute.
Any vamp. Email you want to read?
Let's see here. Yeah.
Oh, we're out of time. No, go ahead.
Okay, so here we go. Senator Schumer is inconsistent at best. He wants more money for the war on drugs. 50 years with Cuba, 50 years with the drug war. It's time to change tactics there, too. Joe G.
Okay.
And James says, completely agree with Dr. Shartok's view on reimbursement of fees. The politicization of prosecutors is widely known as his prosecutorial misconduct. Exactly. And when that happens against a regular human being, not an elected politician who have taken care of themselves. So I don't know. That's what he says.
Okay.
And Nancy says, I mistyped the group that believe this are the progressive whatever.
Okay, listen, we are out of time here. Rosemary Armeo, enjoy the ice cream.
Yeah.
Thank you, I will.
So when we see you, and Joel will be back on Monday, when we see you, you'll be a couple of pounds heavier?
Yeah, but more mentally acute.
Well, I don't think that's possible. Mike Spain, thanks for being here. The Times Union, it's timesunion.com, right?
That's correct.
All right, my friend Alan Shartok.
I am your friend. Never forget it.
You were here as well. Well done, my friend. We are done. The email address is roundtable@wamc.org. An exciting hour, too, is on the way.